Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Usually when we call up Keith Strudler, director of the School of Communication and Media at Montclair State University and WAMC's sports commentator, it's to get his thoughts on a major moment in sports. But right now, the biggest story in the world of sports is the utter absence of sports during the coronavirus outbreak. It started with the NBA and has affected everything from baseball to the Masters to the Kentucky Derby. What are sports fans going to do with all this extra free time? Keith Strudler, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Hey, I would normally say it's great to be here, but it is certainly comforting to be here.
Okay, so what are you doing without sports in your life right now?
It's really interesting because I have this reflexive ESPN button kind of at about 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening. And it's interesting because I don't usually even watch a ton of live sports, but I like to go there to see who's playing. I mean, as you know, right now, we're both supposed to be playing hooky from work, checking our brackets and realizing that we're already done for, you know, any pool that we're in. So generally speaking, it's really difficult, both from a participatory, from having my kids in sports, and just from the kind of, I don't know, comfort that we typically get from watching games. So I suppose instead of sport, I'm spending a lot of time trying to find different Netflix shows. My kids and I have taken to starting entire movie series from the beginning. We just unfortunately watched Phantom Menace last night. I believe we'll be doing the entire Star Wars run. I'm trying to ration the amount of time I'm spending watching news, of course, if at all humanly possible. And interestingly, I mean, even in the void of sport, I find myself going to a lot of my sports friends to talk about things around sport. My former co-host from a regional ESPN radio program that we used to do, we're actually now going to launch our podcast now around sport and sport-related issues because we kind of assume that, you know, we never really talked about sports. We always talked about things around sports. So what better time to do a podcast about sport that really isn't about sport? So I think, like most people, we're really kind of hurting a little bit. And, you know, I think maybe the thing that's most difficult for me, because I go through long stretches where the sport that's on is not my sport, particularly, and no offense to you, Ian, particularly during summer baseball season when I really lose interest, unless it's like the Tour de France or something like that, or the track and field championships. But I'm having a really difficult time on weekends when I normally would be driving around the area for youth soccer tournaments. And I find that to be probably more disheartening than anything. The inability to kind of fill those typically very busy moments with something that has kind of equal fervor. And as much as, you know, we go outside and we have like little mini soccer tournaments in the backyard with me and my two kids, it really doesn't fill that kind of social void that I think youth sports occupies in the kind of mindset of, you know, a lot of people in my age range who have kids who are, you know, kind of engaged with their neighbors and friends.
Back to Star Wars for a second. So where do you slot in Rogue One and Solo if you're watching in order?
I think you have to take them where they would come, right? You take them, I mean, if you're starting with Phantom Menace and you're running through chronologically, I think you place them in the context of where they were in the, you know, in the chronological timeline. And fortunately, I have two kids who are very well versed in that. So I would take Rogue One. I believe that would come right before, A New Hope, correct? I believe we'd throw that right in there. And I agree, look, the kids love that first three, right? They love that. And so I have to indulge. We do the Phantom Menace. We do the Clone Wars. We do all that good stuff. And beyond that, by the way, I apologize. You may hear a dog in the background, which is, you know, something that happens when you're at home. So, and he sleeps all day until I want to be on the radio. I think we'll have to, we're going to have to get through these first three, the Anakin years and that whole thing. I'm a big fan of the last three, minus the one that just came out. But I'm pretty excited about getting to, you know, I like Rogue One a lot. I like Solo. I love The Force Awakens, and I love The Last Jedi. I think they're fantastic. Of course, you know, this recent Skywalker film, I think we all know where we all stand on that. But the kids love it. It's like the worse they are, the more the kids love it. I don't understand it.
Well, maybe it's because it's four kids.
I suppose that's true. suppose that, you've answered the question.
So back to sports for a sec. We're speaking on what would have been day two of the NCAA tournament. It's devastating in Albany because we waited to get the men's tournament back in town for 16, 17 years. The last time it was here, Carmelo Anthony was playing for Syracuse. And finally, the tournament was scheduled to be back. Of course, the coronavirus has halted it. You study sports and society, and you were hitting on this a little bit earlier in the interview. But what kind of place does sports play in our lives now that it's not here? I mean, are you noticing things without it?
What I feel when we kind of see sport go away, that's going away, you know, usually in times of crisis, and we've only experienced a few real times of crisis in our lifetimes in this country. They were, generally speaking, relatively short-lived. And even though their impact, whether you're talking about 9/11, financial crisis, some of these other things that have happened, they allowed us and kind of encouraged us to use sport as a form of empathy and gathering and togetherness and a way to forget. And I think what's so challenging here is that the greatest tool that sport could provide to us right now, which is the ability to kind of come together for some communal experience, has been kind of taken away from us. And so I think we are losing this sense of catharsis that often sport provides to us. We're losing this sense of place that sport often provides to us. Even kind of, for those that really enjoy professional sports and watching on television, I mean, we're losing these parasocial relationships that we often engage with. You joked about Carmelo Anthony, and I was going to say, well, that was that tournament. That was his last good year, of course. But I had to get that. I had to get a Syracuse joke in there somewhere. But really, these are our friends. These are our heroes, and they've just gone away. And so I think it's kind of everywhere. I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and he's lost. They both lost these groups of friends that they engaged with and communicated with. You know, to the extent that sport is this very kind of nonverbal form of communication, especially for a lot of young girls and boys who use this as part of their growing up process. I worry that. This, and look, we'll get through it, but I worry that they're losing a big part of growing up. And to the extent that everyone talks about whether we overemphasize youth sport and even professional sport, I mean, that's a good argument to have at another time. But I think when it goes away, and it goes away for a long time, I think we're starting to see what it really does mean to us as a social people. And so I think it's going to be very difficult. You know, I saw that, the Big Three tournament, which is this, kind of 3-on-3 basketball tournament, they're trying to figure out a way to kind of create like a reality show, Big Brother kind of thing, where they put a bunch of, obviously healthy, non-test positive athletes, basketball players in basically a house with a basketball court so we can watch them hang out and play basketball games. And that sounds like an awful, awful TV show. And yet when I read that, I was like, oh, dear God, I want to watch that now. Like, we're just kind of craving that thing, that fix, I suppose.
What about the long-term impacts on sports, especially pro sports? Because a lot of them, not all certainly, but a lot of them were already kind of struggling with attendance, how to appeal to fans in the 21st century who, want to be on their phones at all times. I know the Yankees have been getting rid of seats in favor of like porch bars and things like that in Yankee Stadium, just because the game experience is changing for people. When sports does finally come back at some point, do you think that we'll have any lasting legacy from this outage?
So I would say, and this is, the multi-trillion-dollar question for almost everything, which is, hey, we didn't need to have that meeting in person anymore, or how well we view our neighbors, now that every time we see someone, we want to go like 15 feet on the other side of the road. I would hope and I would guess that to some extent, when this does come back, we are going to crave such human experience and human attachment and realize, I think, what we missed about sports so much, that my guess is there will be at least a short-lived, push for sport, I suppose. And I think in many ways, when it does come back, I think it is likely to come back pretty strongly, I suppose. I think we'll miss it a lot, and I think we'll be pretty excited. You know, like, imagine the first time you get to go to Yankee Stadium, or the first time you get to watch, well, I would say a Knicks game, but really that's more punishment, I suppose. But, you know, when these things kind of kick off, when college football season would finally kick off, I can imagine the relief that would provide for a lot of people, and just, you know, for some people who work in the industry, the economic relief. So I'm guessing in the short term, I think it'll, you know, seeing how this thing plays out, I think it will be fine. You know, those long-term changes aren't going to go away. There's, you know, another way to potentially look at it, and something you look at in almost every sector now, which is, what are some of the tools that we can develop now that might be useful as when we do eventually go back to a non-social distancing world? So are there ways in which, you know, we can have more digitally engaged fan experiences that we could develop now? Are there ways in which athletes can have more, virtual experiences with their fans? So perhaps, you know, there is an opportunity for innovation during this time period that allows sport to innovate. But, you know, again, these things are so hard to predict based on the time and so forth. And the economic impact. I mean, these leagues, they do run on money, and they are going to be hemorrhaging cash like everyone else. And there's going to be no money rolling into the professional sports landscape and college sports as well. And I would imagine, look, who knows what this is going to mean for the next couple of incoming classes of college athletes. They're going to be, you know, there'll be a year or two of college athletes who have gone through a very seismic shift in how they participate and how they recreate and even the importance of sport. I mean, we're kind of coming to the tail end of a hot recruiting season, but that would kick up again early next year. Who knows where these athletes are, where their heads are? You know, it's going to be hard when a lot of these folks are worried about their communities and their families to make sure that they're going, getting to the weight room to do X number of reps, and they're not going to be able to have spring football. So, you know, I think there'll be some legacy, I suppose. But I don't think it's something that we wouldn't be able to get back to.
Before I ask you about some news of the day stuff, you study media, of course, and you teach it. What about sports stations? Before, the setup was basically, you know, there's 3 hours of games and then you talk about it for 21. And then the next day there's another 3 hours of games. But now we're looking at potentially months without any sort of action on the field to talk about, to cover. ESPN has, you know, sort of had to change its focus in recent days. So what do you make of all of that?
Oh, boy, I wish I had a good answer for that. And I think, you know, in some places, you know, I've seen certainly in a lot of newspapers, they've repurposed a lot of their reporters to cover other things. Now, that's not going to work for something like ESPN, where, you know, we've got plenty of news stations. And I don't know that ESPN necessarily will be a place where we go for news about, you know, the pandemic. Certainly some of those reporters might find opportunities to engage in other places. I think they are, like everyone, trying to figure out ways in which they can use their talent to have conversations with their publics, either through podcasts or, different kinds of video programming and so forth. But it's not going to be easy, because the lifeline of places like ESPN and most sports networks are live sports and the statistics and trades that come out of them. So I don't know that there's a great answer. And I do think that the American public will still continue to kind of reach out and look for new content. I know, you know, the joke is that, you know, every sports network is now ESPN Classic, and they'll start re-airing old games. I'm sure a lot of us will still gravitate towards. They're trying to move some of the you know, whether it's the 30 for 30s and that kind of content. I know the Jordan one, they're supposed to release it hopefully earlier. So they'll do that. But we're looking at a pretty considerable haul without any kind of content. And beyond that, you know, sports programming is very reliant on a lot of interpersonal contact. So, I mean, just putting together one of these shows, there's a lot of people together in a studio and in a room. You know, they're having to send a whole lot of people home. And as much as, you know, you know, NBC News and CNN might be, and NPR and WAMC and so forth, that might be essential personnel. It's hard to say that all sports programming is highly essential, I suppose. And so I don't know. I will tell you, I think some of the, you know, the more regionally based producers are going to have some real significant problems, and I'm sure layoffs and so forth. I'd guess that ESPN will find a way to survive. But if this carries into the fall through, you know, college football and the NFL, we're going to have real problems for a lot of people, I suppose.
Okay, let's talk about a couple actual sports things. Number one, who did you think would win the NCAA tournament had it been played?
A couple of things I'll say on that. First of all, this is where I'm supposed to say this was going to be Florida's year, even though I fully know that Florida was going to lose in the first round. And not only were they going to lose, they were going to have like a 20-point lead at halftime and then still lose. Like, they were going to go scoreless for stretches in the second half. So this is certainly not a silver lining, but they did spare me from that kind of anguish. So the ulcer that was going to result from having to watch that. I'll tell you, I like Kansas. I like Kansas a lot. And they were peaking at the right time. And despite Kansas kind of legacy and history, and I also like the storyline where you have a coach who was largely disgraced at this point getting to stand up there and almost, excuse the expression, give the finger to the NCAA at some point. So I always like those side storylines. So I like Kansas, and I believe Kansas may be preparing to award themselves a national championship anyway, which I like. Like, I love all the teams now that are declaring themselves champions, and that should also go for Cornell Big Red Hockey, because they were, I believe, number one in the country. So I'd like to throw a title up that way as well, even though I'm fairly convinced they would have broken my heart at some point. So I'd go with Kansas.
I have to say, as a UAlbany graduate, I dodged a bullet this year where Siena and Vermont were basically both destined to be in the tournament at the same time while the Danes were about a 500 team. What do you think of Rick Pitino coming to the MAC as the new head coach at Iona?
Well, I know a lot of people that work in the MAC, including a whole bunch that work in sports and basketball at where I used to work at Marist. I got a lot of texts and emails when that was getting ready to be announced, and I think people are pretty excited. I think it's going to be fascinating. And I think, look, no question, Rick Pitino is quite a coach. You can win at Iona, so I would think that there's a real possibility that Iona could become, as it has been in the past, a pretty significant mid-major that sneaks up and wins a game or two in the tournament. The thing that I find the most amusing is when I understand how, and by the way, I will be the first one to be up in the stands up in Marist when Iona comes to town. Like, I've already got my request in for tickets. So, but I will say, I do love when Iona puts out a statement like, look, We had a lot of conversations with Rick, and we just think our values line up perfectly. And I just find that, I mean, I know you have to say it, but it just feels like you're trying a little bit too hard. I'd rather Iona say, look, we're going to win. Like, we are going to win. This guy is, he's not going to get another job, so we're going to win. But I think, look, would I have hired him? Probably not. But I tend to be fairly risk averse. He's not a young man. You know, he gives 4 or 5 good years. He will probably really turn that place. Well, look, that place is pretty good already. And their coach was out. They had a really good coach there before, who's been out for this past year because of a health issue. So I think from a basketball perspective, it's pretty darn good.
Okay, last thing. When football comes back for the first time in 2 decades, Tom Brady will not be in New England. I myself was skeptical that this would happen. We've been reading stories for the past, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years that the marriage wasn't long for this world, but it's still stunning to see a photo of him with a Tampa Bay Bucks logo under his name, isn't it?
It's very strange. And for those that don't know, Tampa Bay was my first sports love. I lived in the Clearwater area until I was about 9. So I fell in love with the very early Bucks, including Doug Williams. I loved Buccaneer Bruce, and I loved everything about that whole organization. John McKay, who I found to be one of the most entertaining coaches in the world. You know, I mean, Tampa Bay will find a way to screw this up. I will say it will be a little weird for sure. I fully respect Tom Brady's accomplishments and his excellence and so forth and so forth. I'm not a huge Tom Brady fan, and I'm certainly not a fan of the New England Patriots. That said, I don't think this is going to work out well for them. I just don't. I think maybe I'm just kind of hoping this, and look, I don't want him to not be able to play anymore, but I think his skills will continue to erode. I mean, Father Time is undefeated. He will not, my guess, be able to do what he was able to do in New England in Tampa Bay. That is my guess. So for those who really dislike Tom Brady, which I'm sure is a considerable share of the audience, despite for those outside of the more New England-y side of the house, I'm going to guess that you'll be able to watch him lose in his final year or two. That's just my guess. Maybe it's just a pipe dream.
Well, Keith Strudler, it's always a pleasure talking sports with you, especially at this weird time when there are no sports. Stay safe, and I hope you're not cooped up in there for too much longer. Thank you so much for taking all of this time for us.
It was a pleasure, and you all stay safe and smart as well.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.